of Britain. And as the cortege was making its way to Westminster Abbey, an old man was seen observing the cortege and weeping. And a person came over to talk to him and said to him, "Sir, why are you weeping? Did you know David Livingstone?" The man said, "Well, yes, I did know David Livingstone. In fact, he said, I went to school with him." He says, "Oh, you must miss him very much. Is that why you're weeping so intently?" The old man says, "No, I'm not weeping because I miss him, although I certainly do miss him." He says, "I'm weeping so intently because many, many years ago when David Livingstone and I left school, God called us both to serve him as missionaries. David Livingstone, he answered that call, gave his life to serve the Lord. But he says, sadly, I refuse to go. My life is almost over, and I've wasted my life. I can't get back the life that I have wasted." And you know, early this morning, your alarm clock probably rang. And it was God's reminder to you that another day has begun. Another week has begun. But also it was a reminder to you that another week has passed. Another day has passed. And every day you and I live on this earth is a gift from God. Every person in this room, every person listening to this message has the same gift. You don't get more than 24 hours in the day because you're richer or more educated or older. Everyone gets the same amount of time in the same day. It's only a question of how will you use the time that God has given to you. And time is a very strange commodity. It's a very strange thing. If you were to look it up in the dictionary, what's the definition of time? You'll discover that no one can really define it. We feel the effects of it. We understand instinctively that we live in time and are going through time, but we really can't define it. It's one of those strange things. Time can't be bought, can't be sold. You can't exchange it with someone else for some more of their time. It's God's gift to the world and God's gift to you personally. Time. And you know, there's a little poem that I used to hear when I was growing up, and maybe you've heard it as well, and it speaks of the passing of time and the sense of time moving almost faster as the older you get. And it says this: "When as a child I laughed and wept, time crept. When as a youth I dreamed and talked, time walked. When I became a full-grown man, time ran. When older still I daily grew, time flew. And soon I shall find in traveling on, time is gone." Oh, how true that is, isn't it? Moses, the great leader of the nation of Israel, lived 80 years, 40 years in Egypt, and then 40 years in the wilderness, taking care of the sheep. And then 40 years leading the children of Israel out of Egypt and to the border of the promised land. Moses was very conscious of time and the use of time. And he said this in Psalm 90. Listen to his words. The days of our years, he says, are 70 years. And if by reason of strength they be 80 years, they're 80 years of age, yet is their strength labor and sorrow. And then he says this, for it is soon cut off, and we fly away. Moses says, this is the way life is. It just comes and it goes. And it seems that you're only just born and starting to find your feet in life, and it's almost over, and then it's over. Moses was a man who lived a long life, who'd seen so many things in life. And yet, if you were to ask Moses, really, what's the most abiding memory of your long life? He would probably say, how quickly it passed. How quickly it passed. You know, Moses said life is 70 years. If this Bible is representing that 70 years, if you're over 35 years of age, you're already in the second half of the book. If you're over 70 years of age, you're in the extra time, the VAT that God has chosen to give you. And that's life. It just comes and it goes, doesn't it? Just like that. And before you know it, it's over. It's over. And Moses had said, teach us to know our days, to number our days, to use them in a wise way. Now, how can you learn to use the limited time that God has given you the right way? Well, let's turn to God's word this evening and we'll find the wisdom. James chapter 4, verse 13. James speaks to every life here how to use the time that God has given you wisely. Now, he begins by showing the wrong way, the wrong use of time, the wrong concept of how to live your life. James is going to teach us in the first place this, that in order to live life well and successfully, the first thing you have to do, you must start with God in your life. He says in verse 13, go to now. That's an old expression that just says, listen, pay attention. It's a rebuke. Beware, he says. Beware to think this way. Ye that say, oh, there's a lot of people thinking this way and talking this way. How do they talk? Today or tomorrow, we shall go into such a city and continue there a year and buy and sell and get gain. So he describes a person here who is planning his future or her future. And here's the person that says, I have laid out a long-term plan for my life. And I'm going to go into such a place, a city. And I'm going to invest X amount in such a business. And I'm going to harvest that and reap the dividend and then invest that in X, Y, and Z. And when I finished all that plan, that whole period of time in my life, I will have this return, this profit. And James says, beware. A person who thinks like that, you're a fool. Because you'll notice in verse 13 that there's someone missing in the thoughts and in the heart and the words of the speaker. God is missing. Here's a person who has planned their future, their business future, their career future, their family's future, without God in their thoughts. James says in verse 14, a great statement of truth, "Whereas ye know not what shall be on the morrow. For what is your life? It is even a vapor that appeareth for a little while, for a little time, and then vanishes away." And he goes on to say, "But now ye rejoice," verse 16, "in your boasting," or boastings, plural. "All such rejoicing is evil." So James says, the man or the woman who leaves God out of their life and boasts in what they're going to do, their plans, their dreams, their ambitions, their investments, their career ambitions. He says, the man that boasts like that without God, he says, all such boasting is evil. It's a sin, because he's a fool. Now, it's not the fact, please don't misunderstand what I'm saying. James here is not condemning making plans. I'm sure when this church was making plans to build this new building, you had many meetings, many head scratchings, I'm very sure, with budgets and materials and payments and banks and all the rest of it that comes with such a project. It's not wrong to make plans. Where's the sin? The sin is making plans without God in your thoughts. Just like the man described here, who's trying to live life and view life from the perspective of self. God is absent. God is ignored. And you know, such a person who thinks that way is rooted in the sin of pride. Because pride is a sin that says, I am in control. I don't need God. I make my own decisions. I control my own destiny. I guide my own future. The middle letter of the word pride is what? I. It's all about I. I'm going to do this my way. Someone once said the national anthem of hell is that old song that Frank Sinatra used to sing, "I did it my way." Oh yes, that's the anthem of hell, all right. I'm going to live life my way. I'm going to do what I want to do. God's not going to be in the picture. God's not going to be in my thoughts. Many years ago in England, growing up in the East End of London, was a very poor Jewish boy called Barney Bernardo. Barney Bernardo's family had almost nothing. No money to go to school. When he went to school, there were no shoes. Just a few rags of clothes. But Barney Bernardo was very determined that he may be born in poverty, but he wasn't going to die in poverty. He was determined that although his parents may be rich or poor, he would not be poor in bringing up his family. He began to work whatever job he could and gathered a little bit of money, enough to get him a boat ticket to South Africa, where he heard there were gold mines, diamond mines. He made his way there and through a lot of hard graft, good and clever investments, he became a very wealthy man. In fact, he became one of the wealthiest men in the world at that time. He wanted to show everybody in England just how wealthy and successful he was. And he ordered a big house to be built for himself in the most expensive area in London. No expense was to be spared in making it the most impressive place The architect sent him the drawings, he approved it, and he had the money transferred, and this great house was built for him. There came a day when he decided, it's time for me to go back to London, to let everybody see how successful I am. He sold his diamond mines in Africa, got on the boat, and was making his way back to England. Before he reached England, the boat docked somewhere off the coast of France or Italy. He began to think as he was standing on that great boat one night of where he had come from and where he had now arrived as a person. Born in poverty with nothing and now one of the wealthiest men on the earth. As he began to reflect on that, how he had reached the top of the podium, so to speak, he suddenly realized when he had got to the top of the tree that it was empty there. Of course, if he had listened to the wisdom of his illustrious ancestor, Solomon, he would have learned that earlier. Vanity of vanities, all is what? Vanity. Empty without God. Barney Bernardo suddenly realized that all of his so-called achievements without God were nothing. And in a moment of time, in despair, he walked off the edge of the boat and plunged into the sea, drowned himself. Never made it back to England. Never set foot in the great house that he had built to show off his wealth. Because he now realized when you live life without God, it's empty. It's empty. But then the second thing you have to realize in order to use your time wisely. You have to realize this about life. Life is finite and life is fragile. Now, I know all of us who have thought about this issue in this room, we understand that life is finite, but the problem is we live as if there is no end to life. Certainly most of the world that we live in, they're just getting on with living life as if there is no end. Intellectually, we grasp the fact that life will come to an end. But in our hearts, we just refuse to accept it. The Bible makes it clear, repeatedly, that the one certainty you have in life is that it will come to an end. In fact, it puts it in this way. It is appointed unto man once to die. Isn't that right? Once. So it's already set down in God's calendar that the life that you're living, the life that I'm living, will definitely come to an end. And you notice the way it's phrased. It is appointed. In other words, it's not something you decide. It's not something you and God negotiate over. It's something that God sets down. It's fixed in His divine calendar by Him. It is appointed unto man once to die. But then, the other great truth to remember is this. Life isn't just finite, but life is fragile. Look what James says in verse 14 of James chapter 4. He says, whereas ye know not what shall be on the morrow. You don't know what's coming around the corner. He says, for what is your life? It is even a vapor that appeareth for a little time and then vanishes away. He says it appears and it goes. It's finite. But he also says it's fragile. He says, your life, ye know not what shall be
on the morrow.
Nobody can see around the corner but God. Oh, you can go to the insurers today. They call themselves life insurance agents. The only thing they'll guarantee you is they'll sell you a policy when you die. Not if you die, when you die. But they'll never sell you a policy that will promise you'll be alive tomorrow. Or in a week's time. Or in a month's time. Because no one on earth can guarantee that you'll have a tomorrow. I was down in Enniskillen today, making my way up, and I was thinking the last time I was in Enniskillen was just some months ago. And I met an uncle of mine who has a boat. In fact, he grew up on a little island on Loch Earn. And I said to him when I was down last time, will you take my children out on the boat next time? They wanted to go out on the boat. He says, I will surely. He gave me his number. He says, call me the next time you're coming down to Fermanagh and I'll bring them out. But just a few months ago, as he was going out, seemed healthy, seemed strong, seemed to have made all the plans for the day. God just took him out of this world in a moment of time. Gone. Got up that morning, seemingly had all to live for, seemingly had a whole day to enjoy with so much to do and plan and think. Never knew when he left the home that day, left his bed that day, that he wouldn't see another day. And life is fragile, so fragile. All it will take this evening as you go down that road is for you to press the wrong lever in your car or lose concentration for a moment. Or someone coming the other way doing likewise, and you can be out in God's eternity in a moment of time. A moment of time. Well, I have carried the coffins of two of my cousins, and I've lost others, people I went to school with, same class, no longer with us, didn't make it to 40. Some didn't even make it to 30. Taken out in a moment of time. And in order to use the time that God has given you right, in order to have the right perspective of life, not only must you have God in your thoughts, but you have to remind yourself every day, life is finite and life is fragile. And life cannot be wasted. But then the third and final thing I want to leave with you this evening from this little passage is this. Not only must God be in our thoughts, not only must we remember that life is finite and life is fragile, but the third thing we have to do is we must seek God's will and follow it in every area of our lives. Look at verse 15 of James chapter 4. And this is all great advice from James. He says, for that ye ought to say, having shown you the wrong way to live, in verse 13 and 14, he says, this is the right way to live. How? Ye ought to say this, if the Lord will, we shall live and do this or that. In other words, every day you're to get up and you're to say, I hope to achieve A and B and C
if the Lord wills, if it's God's will, if this is right for my life, if this pleases the Lord. The old Presbyterians, when you would drive past their churches, used to have on their notice boards these two initials, DV, from two Latin words, Deo Volente. Deo is the Latin words for God. Volente is from the Latin verb to will. And you put the two together, Deo Volente, God willing. It's taken exactly from this verse. And they used to put it on the notice boards to say that the plan for this church for this week on Monday, we have the children's meeting. On Wednesday night, we have the prayer meeting and Bible study. Friday night, we have the youth fellowship. DV, God willing. God willing. James says, ye ought to say, whenever you look at life, whenever you plan life, if God wills, if God permits, if it pleases God. And you know, if we're really honest, very few of us think that way, even Christians. We spend most of our life setting out our plans, our ambitions, our dreams, and then we sort of bring it to God at the end and say, well, Lord, would you sort of bless what I have decided here? And if we're being brutally honest, most of us will say, well, even if you don't bless it, I'm still going to do it because I want to do it. That's how we view life. That's how we get on with life. That's how the ungodly get on with life. We're presumptuous. We're self-confident. Self-willed. James says, no. You can't live life like that. If the Lord wills, if the Lord wills, we'll do it. And you know, God has a wonderful way of shaking up our lives if we ignore Him. Just open your newspaper and read the obituary columns. And you read all these expressions, don't they? Surprisingly, unexpected, suddenly. This happened. This occurred. This person, that person, was taken out into God's eternity. And Proverbs 27 says this, boast not thyself of tomorrow. Don't boast in it. No guarantee. For thou knowest not what a day may bring forth. Well, how true that is. Of course, there's a very positive side to that. We may not know what's around the corner, but God knows. And if you know Him, you can put your head on the pillow at night and say, I leave it in your hands. Whether I wake up tomorrow, God wills. Whatever problem I have to face tomorrow, God knows. Whatever needs I have, God can and will provide. He's already ahead of me. You know, the Lord's Prayer that the Lord Jesus taught His disciples to pray puts an emphasis on a day-to-day dependence on Him. Because it says, give us this day what? Our daily bread. Not our weekly bread. Our daily needs. And the implication is, you're to come to God every day saying, I need you. I depend on you. Your will today, not just last week, but today and tomorrow and every day. I need thee. Are you a presumptuous person? Have you been laying plans and ignoring God from your life? Has it ever occurred to you that the only reason you're here this evening, that the only reason you're still breathing this evening, is because God has permitted you to be here? to live another day.
When I was at school, they used to talk about, in the biology class, involuntary actions and organs, didn't they? Processes of the body. What they really meant was out of your control. Your breathing is an involuntary reflex or an action, because God's controlling it right now. And the same God who started it can end it just like that. This year, 2022, may be the year that God calls you home. You ever thought about that? This may be the last month that you ever live. You ever thought about that? This week that we have just started may be the last week that you have on this earth. Have you ever thought about that? This day may be the last day of your life. Have you ever thought about that? Of course, there's a good side to this. The same God who controls whether you live or die is the same God who has a plan for your life and a purpose for your life. A God who's interested in your life. But let me wrap this up by saying this. If you go to the cemetery, go to a gravestone, you'll see two dates on the gravestone. The date of the birth and the date of the death. And in between those two dates, the mason has put a little dash. You and I have the first date already marked down, the date of our birth. God has already set down the second date, the date of our death. You and I are just living in the dash. Right now. It's where we are. How close to the end of it? Only God knows. But the Bible says there's another appointment. It's not on the gravestone. Because the Bible speaks of three sovereign appointments that every person in this room has. And there are appointments that we don't control that are set down in God's calendar. The first one we've all experienced already. The date of our birth is already there, fixed, already occurred. But then the Bible speaks of another date, the date of our death. Only God knows when that is. But then the Bible warns that there's a third appointment. You say, well, what's that? I thought death was the final appointment. No. It says, for it is appointed unto man once to die, but after this, the judgment, the final appointment, is the appointment of the judgment day, of the judgment seat, when each one in this room will have to stand before God. And my simple question to you this evening is this: are you ready to meet God? The old prophet cried, prepare, prepare to meet thy God. Are you ready to meet him? Oh, we have enough time, because we're still in the right side of eternity to prepare. And if you're here this evening and you're not a Christian, it's time to become one. It's time to get right with God. It's time to stop playing the fool with God. It's time to repent and deal with your sin. Find forgiveness. And if you're here and you're a Christian and you haven't been what you should be, and only you know that, you have to also remind yourself, life is not a dress rehearsal. You only come this way one time. You don't get a second chance. You can't continue to waste your life. Life is far too precious to waste on the things of this world. Are you wasting your life? Hell is full of people who said, I'll deal with this problem tomorrow. Is that you? Is that you? You can come to a church like this. You can learn the vocabulary of spiritual language. No doubt there are people here who've come through the Sunday school. Your fellowship may have attended the Christian school. Know all the terms, but are not right with God. I had a relative who died some time ago, a little while ago. He attended a Free Presbyterian church. Listen to this.